This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Thursday, March 7, 2024. President Joe Biden delivers his annual State of the Union address before a joint session of Congress tonight, during which, according to top White House aides, he'll call for raising taxes on corporations and using the money to cut taxes for the middle class and reduce the federal budget deficit. The speech is live at 9 p.m. Eastern on the C-SPAN networks. U.S. House passes a bill on immigration and border security requiring illegal immigrants charged with certain crimes to be detained. The bill is named for Laken Riley, the nursing student in Georgia who was murdered, and the suspect was in the U.S. unlawfully and had previous run-ins with the law. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer gives an update on the package of six fiscal year 2024 government spending bills that the House passed yesterday and must pass the Senate and get the president's signature by Friday night to avoid a partial government shutdown. Sweden's prime minister deposits the paperwork at the State Department in Washington, D.C. to officially become the 32nd member of the NATO military alliance. A bill to force the Chinese company that owns TikTok to sell the app or be banned from U.S. app stores over concern the Chinese Communist Party is collecting user data goes before the House Energy and Commerce Committee. And the chair of the House Subcommittee on the Weaponization of the Federal Government says that federal law enforcement monitored some Americans' financial transactions based upon their conservative views on guns and immigration, putting them in the same category as violent extremists. Story from USA Today, President Joe Biden faces a pivotal State of the Union address Thursday as he looks to silence skeptics about his ability to keep serving, convince restless Americans of a strong economy, and reestablish the stakes of a likely rematch against Donald Trump. The president speaks at 9 p.m. Eastern. It'll be live on the C-SPAN Network, C-SPAN Radio, C-SPAN Television, streamed at C-SPAN.org, on the C-SPAN Now mobile app, and we'll also have the Republican response given by Senator Katie Britt of Alabama. There was not a White House briefing today, but the White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre previewed the State of the Union address during the news conference on Wednesday.
You will hear the president lay out the historic achievements he has delivered on for the American people and his vision for the future. Looking at what President Biden faced when he came into office and where we are now, it is clear he's gotten more done in the first 3 years than most presidents have accomplished in two terms. He will talk about the success in implementing his agenda, from infrastructure to chips to lowering drug prices and getting rid of junk fees, as you heard him speak to yesterday with his competition council. He will talk about whose side he is on and his plan to improve the lives of all Americans. That includes lowering costs for Americans and giving people more breathing room, lowering health care premiums and taking on Big Pharma to lower the cost of prescription drugs, making the wealthy and corporations pay their fair share in taxes, saving our democracy and protecting our democratic institutions, protecting women's reproductive health in the face of relentless attacks from Republican elected officials, making progress on his unity agenda, ending cancer as we know it, delivering on the sacred obligation to veterans, tackling the mental health crisis, and beating the opioid and overdose pandemic. We will have more to share tomorrow, but fundamentally, the president will outline an agenda that is about continuing to build on the progress that we've made over the last 3 years. The president has always been an optimistic person, as you all know, and even in the face of challenges that we have in front of us, he will share why he is hopeful about this country's future and why it is a mistake. It is a mistake to bet against the American people.
The White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre at her Wednesday news conference. Former President Donald Trump, the likely Republican presidential nominee this year, expected to face the likely Democratic presidential nominee, Joe Biden, posted Wednesday on his social media platform, Truth Social, "I am pleased to inform you that tomorrow night we will be doing a live play-by-play of Crooked Joe Biden's State of the Union address. I will correct in rapid response any and all inaccurate statements, especially pertaining to the border and his weaponization of the DOJ, FBI, AGs, and district attorneys to go after his political opponent, me, something never done before in this country. We did this once before, tremendous success, beating all records. It's important for the country to get the truth." That was the post from Donald Trump. Today, the Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell spoke on the Senate floor about President Biden's State of the Union address tonight.
Well, tonight, President Biden will deliver the last State of the Union address of his term. For the past 3 years, these speeches have served as mile markers, but not of any meaningful progress toward a more perfect union. Instead, each year, the American people tuned in to see just how far the president's own version of his record is from the reality of their lives. For 3 years, the president who campaigned as a moderate has governed like an activist from the furthest fringe of the Democratic Party. The Biden administration's agenda has meant pain at home and weakness abroad. It didn't have to be this way. President Biden took office amid strong tailwinds from an economic recovery that was already restoring the record-setting prosperity we saw before the pandemic, to an historic modernization of our military that was well underway. He inherited everything he needed to point our nation toward further security and prosperity. But he chose weakness and invited danger instead. Today, nearly two-thirds of voters say our economy is worse than it was 4 years ago. Not even one in four think our country is on the right track. Barely a quarter of the country expects our economy to improve in the coming year. But that hasn't stopped President Biden from trying to convince working Americans to take his word for it and ignore their own shrinking paychecks. He's literally taken a victory tour to tout his disastrous economic record. His administration has declared Bidenomics the word of the year. Meanwhile, American consumers are shelling out a bigger portion of their income on groceries than at any point in the last 30 years.
The Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican from Kentucky, today on the Senate floor. Fortune magazine writes that President Joe Biden is going into Thursday's State of the Union address with an expanded plan to raise corporate taxes and use the proceeds to trim budget deficits and cut taxes for the middle class. The Democratic president in this election year is refining the economic agenda that he's been pushing since the 2020 presidential race, trying to show that he is addressing voters' concerns about the cost of living. With Republican control of the House, Biden's agenda is unlikely to become law and serves as something of a sales pitch to voters. In a preview of Biden's remarks, aides, including Leo Brainer, director of the White House National Economic Council, said the president would contrast his proposals with Republican plans to extend former President Donald Trump's expiring tax breaks and further slash corporate tax rates. That was from Fortune magazine. C-SPAN spoke this morning with Congressman Brad Sherman, Democrat from California, about what he'd like to hear from President Biden tonight, State of the Union address, when it comes to the economy.
As far as the economy is concerned, that's expected to be talked about by the president tonight. What would you like him to say as far as his economic outlook, his economic desires in this last year and potential second term?
Well, the president can't just say finish the job. He's got to lay out an ambitious agenda for the next 4 years beyond what he proposed three and a half years ago. And I hope it includes regulating, not just negotiating the price of a few drugs, but regulating the price of all drugs. We're paying triple what much of the world is paying for pharmaceuticals, and we ought to pass legislation so that the drug companies get a fair price that reflects the risks that they take when they do the research. But they can't just price a drug at $1 million a year or $100,000 a year and say it's life and death, you have to pay us. No other country allows that. It's time to regulate drug prices. And I think that that would be the biggest thing he could do at the federal level to bring down inflation.
One more from your financial services hat, if I may. The SEC yesterday approved a rule that would require some companies to report greenhouse gases. It's getting a lot of reaction. What do you think of the rule, and what do you think the reaction will be amongst those large companies?
I think the companies will comply. I think many of them will like the fact that there's a standardized way, an accepted way, to define their greenhouse gas effect. But this is long overdue. I'm an old CPA. The goal is to report to shareholders and prospective shareholders the information that they think is material to their investment decision. And for an awful lot of investors, the greenhouse gas effect of a company is material. And what this will do is will cause American companies to compete for capital by reducing their greenhouse gas effect. This is going to help us in our climate goals.
Congressman Brad Sherman, Democrat from California, on C-SPAN this morning. From ABC News, during his State of the Union address, President Joe Biden will announce an emergency military mission to construct a port in the Mediterranean Sea on Gaza's coast to get humanitarian aid in, senior officials said Thursday. The port will be able to receive large ships carrying food, water, medicine, and temporary shelters, a senior White House official said. Senior defense officials said the port's main feature will be a temporary pier that will provide the capacity for hundreds of additional truckloads of assistance each day. The effort will be undertaken by the U.S. and partner countries, the senior defense official said, and will take a number of weeks to plan and execute. That was from ABC News. U.S. House Speaker Mike Johnson, Republican from Louisiana, talked about the President's State of the Union address tonight at a news conference on Wednesday.
I've been asked many times, as many of us have, if you had to describe in one word what you believe the State of the Union is. You've heard the word crisis, you've heard catastrophe. I think maybe a summary is decline. And I say that with great sadness, we all do. But it's because of this president and his administration that we are indisputably in decline. Our economic strength is in decline. Everyday goods are more expensive. People can barely afford the cost of living now, their groceries and gasoline. Home ownership is increasingly out of reach. And U.S. household debt is at an all-time high. So our economic strength is in decline. American sovereignty is in decline. You've heard us lament the border. The southern border is a total catastrophe. There's no other way to describe that. Traffickers and cartels have taken operational control of the border. Fentanyl poisoning is killing our children. While President Biden opened the border with his reckless executive actions, and remember, we documented at least 64 actions that he and his agencies have taken to open that border wide. It was by design. In the midst of all that, we also learned last week he never one time spoke to the chief of the Border Patrol. It's unconscionable. Innocent Americans from Lake and Riley in Georgia to the 14-year-old rape victim of an illegal immigrant in our home state of Louisiana, as you just heard Leader Scalise talk about, they've all been victimized by those whom the Biden administration has released into our country. He is releasing them into your state. Every state's a border state. The safety of our cities is in decline. Carjackings are up. Attacks against law enforcement are rising. We have more than 600,000 known criminal aliens roaming the streets of America right now, free to reoffend and victimize Americans. The actual number is, of course, much higher. That's the official number that we know about. But we don't know how many people have come across the border. And some of us believe it may be as many as 15 million illegal aliens who have come across that border since Joe Biden walked into the Oval Office 3 years ago. America's presence on the world stage is in decline, and you heard us talk about that this morning as well. Iran, Russia, China, our adversaries are acting more provocatively than they have in many, many years, and we have unrest unlike we haven't seen since World War II. The president is turning his back right now on our greatest ally, Israel. And after Biden's botched withdrawal from Afghanistan, our stature has been diminished to a point that is difficult to calculate.
House Speaker Mike Johnson at a news conference on Wednesday previewing President Biden's State of the Union address, which is tonight, Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, live on the C-SPAN networks. Associated Press writes that the invitation list for President Biden's State of the Union address on Thursday speaks volumes about what Democrats and Republicans want to focus on as the 2024 election season heats up. Biden and Democratic lawmakers have invited several health care providers and women whose lives have been impacted by stricter abortion laws in states with Republican-controlled legislatures following the landmark 2022 Supreme Court ruling that stripped away constitutional protections for abortion. First Lady Jill Biden has also invited union leaders, a gun control advocate, and others that she and her husband have met as they traveled the country promoting his agenda. Republican lawmakers are inviting guests who place heavy focus on the nation's broken immigration system, an issue that voters say is a central concern ahead of the November election. That was a story from the Associated Press. Congressman Tom Tiffany, Republican from Wisconsin, posted a short video of him standing by the security fence that now surrounds the U.S. Capitol building.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, the State of the Union is here tonight. President Biden will be giving his presentation at the United States Capitol, and he'll be protected by this fence just put in today for him. But yet he will not put up a wall on the southern border to protect Americans.
Congressman Tom Tiffany. And once again, State of the Union address live 9 p.m. Eastern. Listen here on C-SPAN Radio. Watch it on C-SPAN Television. Follow it on the C-SPAN Now mobile app or streamed at cspan.org. That'll be followed by the Republican response, Senator Katie Britt of Alabama. And then we will get your reaction by phone and social media. Story WRD-TV in Augusta, Georgia. A U.S. representative from Georgia intends to honor a nursing student killed on the University of Georgia campus by keeping an open seat during the State of the Union address. Lakin Riley was allegedly killed by Jose Antonio Ibarra, a man from Venezuela. Officials with the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement say Ibarra illegally entered the United States near El Paso, Texas in 2022. Congressman Mike Collins, Republican of Georgia, invited Riley's parents to the speech, according to his office. Her parents declined, and Collins said that he will keep the seat empty. Collins said the president will see an empty seat in the gallery that memorializes those who are no longer with us because of his open border. That was from WRDW-TV, Augusta, Georgia. The U.S. House today in Washington passed an immigration bill named for Lakin Riley, and it would expand when an illegal immigrant charged with a crime must be detained. Congressman Rick Allen, Republican from Georgia, supported the bill during floor debate.
Lakin was an outstanding student at Augusta University's nursing school. In Athens, which was well on her way to a successful career helping others and saving countless lives, all to be cut brutally short by a vicious criminal. This should have never happened and cannot happen again in this nation. In fact, this could have been prevented had the Senate passed H.R. 2 and secured our border. It is the responsibility of Congress and this administration to make sure every American can live in this country safely and we be a law-abiding nation. Not only is the suspect in Lakin Riley's tragic death here illegally, but he also has a criminal record that includes shoplifting in Athens, Clark County. Allowing this criminal to freely roam our communities was absolutely unacceptable. H.R. 7511 will ensure illegal immigrants who commit theft or are detained by ICE rather than released back into these communities. The bill will also allow states to sue the federal government for failing to enforce our borders. I am sick of President Biden's and liberal officials across this country not enforcing current law. It is beyond me how anyone can support the sanctuary and catch and release policies that have attracted illegal aliens to these communities, just like the one responsible for taking Lakin Riley's life.
Congressman Rick Allen, Republican from Georgia, on the House floor. Congressman Gerald Nadler, Democrat from New York, ranking member on the Judiciary Committee, opposed the bill.
The legislation before us today would subject to mandatory detention any undocumented immigrants merely arrested or charged with committing an act of theft, larceny, or shoplifting, along with those who are convicted or who admit to committing such acts. Let's think about that. Someone who was arrested, who was never even charged with a crime, is now going to be subject to mandatory immigration detention? The case of Lake and Riley is a tragedy, but as is often said, hard cases make bad law. Under this bill, committing a misdemeanor shoplifting, or even committing no crime at all, can result in a DACA or TPS recipient, someone who may have been in this country for decades, being subject to mandatory detention. Sadly, there are countless real-life examples of people getting arrested because of mistaken identity. Through erroneous witness identification, biographical similarities to perpetrators, and errors caused by faulty facial recognition technology.
Congressman Gerald Nadler, Democrat from New York, on the House floor. The House passed this bill. The vote was 251 to 170, with 37 Democrats joining all Republicans present in voting yes. This is Washington Today. The Senate is still working on the partial government funding package, six bills, about half of the total, and the price tag is $467 billion. They face a Friday deadline to pass it and get it signed into law by the president, or there will be a partial government shutdown. Some of the departments funded include housing and urban development, commerce, agriculture, and veterans affairs. The Senate Majority Leader, Chuck Schumer, Democrat from New York, gave a status update today on the Senate floor.
Last night, the House passed the six appropriation bills with an overwhelming bipartisan vote, 339 to 85. Last night, the Senate took the first step to advance the appropriations bill via voice vote, which I hope portends more bipartisan cooperation moving forward. The watchwords for the Senate will be cooperation and speed as we work to pass these appropriation bills before tomorrow's night's deadline. And it's noteworthy that a majority of both parties in the House, a majority of even the Republicans, supported this legislation. Of course, the process never is easy in divided government, but with hard work, cooperation, persistence, good things can happen if we put working together before other extraneous and often destructive issues. The Senate will continue our work on these appropriation bills today so we can finish the package before tomorrow night's deadline. We're close to the finish line, but it'll take bipartisan cooperation to get us there.
The Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Democrat from New York, on the Senate floor. Opponents to this six spending bill package point to the total, again, $467 billion, and also the approximately 6,000 earmarks in it. Those earmarks also called congressionally directed spending. Senator Mike Braun, Republican from Indiana, spoke against the bill on the Senate floor on Wednesday.
We're going to be considering another package tomorrow, Friday, that takes the whole process of doing budgets, asking, do you really need it? Aren't there some places that we can surely get back to where we don't spend more than we take in? Because when we don't, we're borrowing every penny of it. And on every dollar that we spend here, 5 years ago, it was about 20 cents of that dollar we had to borrow. Now it's 30 cents. In the arithmetic, the numbers don't just go away. It'll be the single biggest thing all of you, this country, has to deal with over the next 5 to 10 years. And it's just starting to get to the point where it's going to literally break the back of the American public. Sooner or later, you won't have people lending us that money. Sooner or later, it's going to crowd out almost everything we do here. And it's shameful in my mind. I want to focus on one actually small part of it, but what is symbolic of what shouldn't be happening here, earmarks. Earmarks are justified because we ought to be able to maybe do it better here, should have input in it, not let the executive branch do that. But to me, that would be valid if, in fact, we were balancing our budget in the first place. And until we get total fiscal reform here and at least start to turn it around to where the deficits get smaller, the debt is never going to get smaller because, in general, if you take out a loan, imagine if you told your banker I just want to pay interest only for as long as I have that loan. They'd laugh you out of the office.
Senator Mike Braun, Republican from Indiana, on the Senate floor on Wednesday when the Senate began work on the $6 billion federal government spending package. Friday is the deadline that it needs to pass the Senate. It's already passed the House. It'll be signed into law or there'll be a partial government shutdown. And when the Senate finishes this $6 billion package, next up, the second tranche of six bills will include defense and homeland security. That funding expires March 22nd. Story from thehill.com, the GOP-led House Budget Committee on Thursday voted to advance a budget resolution that includes ambitious proposals aimed at cutting federal spending, beefing up work requirements for social programs, and the establishing of a special commission to tackle funding threats to entitlements. The committee voted along party lines to advance proposal after an hours-long markup hearing that began early Thursday. And The Hill has this: while the resolution won't be signed into law, Republicans hope it will serve as a blueprint for spending for the coming fiscal year as Congress works to wrap up its fiscal 2024 funding work this month. That from The Hill. Wall Street today, the Dow up 130, NASDAQ up 241, S&P up 52. Story from Barron's: Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell has wrapped up his two-day visit to Capitol Hill. Powell told the House Financial Services Committee on Wednesday that he expects interest rate cuts to come this year. He echoed those comments on Thursday before the Senate Banking Committee, saying that cuts can and will begin this year. In both hearings, Powell noted that the central bank's policy setting committee still isn't convinced that continued progress toward their 2% inflation objective is assured, and that it won't make sense to cut interest rates until it is confident. That from Barron's. Senator Tom Tillis, Republican of North Carolina, asked Chair Powell at today's hearing about the economic term that President Biden has been using lately, criticizing companies who charge the same amount for a lesser amount of product.
I got a question about shrinkflation. I tell you, some of these words that we come up with, but President Biden's using the idea of shrinkflation and chastising manufacturers for creating smaller portion sizes for potato chips. I'll use that as one example. But if you have rising input cost and you're not able to control that, and you're in a marginal business to begin with, and now you're saying you can't even reduce the quantities, how does a business that's not making a profit make that work?
You know, I mean, we see inflation as at the aggregate level as a mismatch between supply and demand.
Yeah.
And as we've seen supply get better and we've seen demand cool off a bit, it was very hot coming out of the pandemic. We see inflation coming down.
We saw food inflation between 2010 and 2021 at 18% over 11 years. And over the last 3 years, we've seen it at 21%. I think that we have a industry that's trying to actually provide products that that consumers want, and now they're being chastised for trying to figure out how to make the numbers work. So this whole idea of shrinkflation is just confounding to me. I'm going to submit some for the record. I want to stay on time.
Senator Tom Tillis, Republican from North Carolina, questioning the Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell at today's Banking Committee hearing. The committee chair is Sherrod Brown, Democrat from Ohio. He asked the chairman about the increased use of variable pricing beyond airline and concert tickets and ride-sharing services.
More and more, many companies use algorithms that combine competitors' price information to engage in what they call dynamic pricing or surge pricing. You know that corporate PR teams worked hard on this. Just another way for corporations to make it harder for consumers to seek out lower prices and to pad corporate profits. Are you concerned that the wide adoption of these price gouging strategies, these pricing schemes, if you will contribute to inflation?
I mean, I think it works both ways. Let me say this, we're well aware of this trend and we're monitoring it. Remember that prices go down when there's no one in the store and they go up when there are a lot of people. If you're doing dynamic pricing, same thing with the ride companies, it works both ways. I don't know that it have implication for inflation. It would certainly have implications for consumers who need to be informed.
You think that this kind of surge pricing might lower prices overall?
So, I mean, that's my understanding is that the idea is that in slow periods, prices actually go down, and in higher period in busy periods, they go up.
But these are sophisticated economists working for these big companies, and they're not going to do things to lower their profits.
I think the price mechanism is incredibly important in our economy. I think we need to give companies the freedom to do that, as long as they're not fixing prices or failing to disclose the nature of the price changes to the public.
The Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell, questioned by Senate Banking Committee Chair Sherrod Brown, Democrat from Ohio. The next Fed policy meeting is March 19th and 20th, when we'll learn what happens with interest rates. The Senate today passed legislation to reauthorize and expand a law compensating Americans exposed to nuclear radiation by the federal government. The vote was 69 to 30. 60 votes were needed to pass it. The Radiation Exposure Compensation Reauthorization Act, sponsored by Senator Josh Hawley, Republican from Missouri, now goes to the House. The White House supports the bill. 20 Republicans voted yes. 2 Democrats voted no. Tom Carper, the chair of the Environment and Public Works Committee, and Joe Manchin, chair of the Energy and Natural Resources Committee. Washington Today continues in a moment.
Hi, it's Nate from C-SPAN. Imagine, 45 years ago when there were just a handful of television networks, C-SPAN first went on the air, bringing an unfiltered view of government directly to America's living rooms. No spin, no commentary, just pure democracy in action.
And it's Shannon from C-SPAN. It was a bold experiment. We finally had a front row seat to Congress, the White House, and the campaign trail, all without government funding.
As we celebrate 45 years and a legacy of unfiltered access, we ask for your support of a donation in honor of over 4 decades of service. Your gift, no matter how big or small, will help maintain this vital resource for access to the democratic process.
You can help ensure another 45 years of witnessing history unfold and empowering citizens to be informed and engaged in the political process. Visit cspan.org/donate today and join our 45th anniversary campaign.
Thank you for supporting C-SPAN, your unfiltered view of government. Visit cspan.org/donate today to make your gift of support. Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Welcome back to Washington Today, available as a podcast on the C-SPAN Now mobile app and wherever you find your podcasts. The New York Times reports that Sweden formally joined NATO on Thursday, becoming its 32nd member, 2 years after Russia's invasion of Ukraine forced both Sweden and Finland to dump their traditional military non-alignment and seek the collective security of the American-led alliance. After months of uncertainty caused by the hesitations of Turkey and Hungary, Sweden officially joined by depositing its legal paperwork, its instrument of accession, to the North Atlantic Treaty with the U.S. State Department in Washington. That was from the New York Times. Today's ceremony included the Swedish Prime Minister and U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken. The secretary said today is historic.
Before Putin's re-invasion of Ukraine in February of 2022, if you looked at the polling, less than one-third of Swedes supported joining NATO. This was part and parcel of Sweden's history. And then everything changed. After the invasion, three-quarters of the Swedish people made clear their desire to join. Swedes realized something very profound, that if Putin was willing to try to erase one neighbor from the map, then he might well not stop there. And if he was allowed to proceed with impunity, not only would his aggression potentially continue, but would-be aggressors everywhere would get the message that it was open season. And so the Swedish people stood up not only for their own country, but stood up to the common responsibility that we share to try to make sure that the very foundations of the international system that we all rely on to have peace, to have security, to have opportunity, when they were challenged, we were there to defend them. Sweden was there to defend them. And I think what this tells us even more profoundly is the reaffirmation of Sweden's democratic character. Change driven by its people, by its citizens. There's also no clearer example than today of the strategic debacle that Putin's invasion of Ukraine has become for Russia. We see a Russia that is now weaker militarily, economically, diplomatically.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken standing beside the Swedish Prime Minister at the State Department in Washington, where the documents deposited, Sweden officially joins NATO. The Prime Minister, again from the New York Times article, pledged that Sweden, which had largely dismantled its ground forces after 1989, but has maintained a powerful air force and navy, would soon reach NATO's goal of spending 2% of its GDP on the military. NATO is planning a ceremony on Monday to raise the Swedish flag at its Brussels headquarters, as well as at NATO commands across Europe and North America. That was from the New York Times. From CNN, a powerful House committee advanced a bill on Thursday that could lead to a nationwide ban against TikTok on all electronic devices, renewing lawmakers' challenge to one of the world's most popular social media apps and highlighting unresolved fears that TikTok may pose a Chinese government spying risk. The measure that sailed unanimously through the House Energy and Commerce Committee would prohibit TikTok from U.S. app stores unless the social media platform used by roughly 170 million Americans is quickly spun off from its China-linked parent company, ByteDance. That was from CNN. Before today's markup, the bill's sponsors, who are the leaders of the Select Committee on the Chinese Communist Party, Chair Mike Gallagher, Republican of Wisconsin, and ranking Democrat Roger Krishnamoorthy of California, posted a video saying that TikTok was mounting a campaign against the bill.
Right now, as we speak, TikTok is serving a pop-up on phones across America. If you open the app, a pop-up appears saying, enter in your zip code, and then it will call the member of Congress in that zip code in order to intimidate them to not support our bill, which would force a divestiture between TikTok and its parent company, ByteDance. Notably, the pop-up is saying that our effort is an outright ban. That is a lie. That is not what the bill does. So here you have an example of a adversary-controlled application lying to the American people and interfering with the legislative process in Congress. In a weird way, it almost proves the point that we've been making here.
They're using the geolocation of the users in order to be able to identify the member of Congress to call. And this is the type of data, by the way, which ByteDance used from TikTok to target journalists. So this is exactly the problem that we have right now with a foreign adversary-controlled media app, social media app. And I think it only highlights the need for this particular bill.
And I should say again, we've been working for months to arrive at a responsible, bipartisan approach, one that allows actually TikTok to survive as long as it breaks up with ByteDance and by extension the CCP. So at a minimum, the company should stop lying about our effort. You have Democrats and Republicans with serious national security concerns trying to legislate this solution to this problem responsibly, and the intimidation tactics, the disinformation has to stop.
I would just ask users to please ask ByteDance to divest TikTok so that your experiences can continue on the app. It's really a choice for ByteDance. And it's a choice about whether or not they are going to allow TikTok to basically ultimately be beholden to the Chinese Communist Party. And we hope that they choose correctly. And I hope that you as users also ask them to choose correctly.
Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy, Democrat from California, and Congressman Mike Gallagher, Republican from Wisconsin, the leaders of the Select Committee on the Chinese Communist Party, talking about their bill that passed today unanimously through the House Energy and Commerce Committee. At TikTok policy, posting on X, this bill is an outright ban of TikTok, no matter how much the authors tried to disguise it. This legislation will trample the First Amendment rights of 170 million Americans and deprive 5 million small businesses of a platform they rely on to grow and create jobs. The House Select Subcommittee on the Weaponization of the Federal Government held a hearing today that the committee's Republican majority says was to, quote, examine how big government has colluded with big banks to surveil Americans' private financial data. The financial surveillance uncovered by the committee was not predicated on any specific evidence of particularized criminal conduct, and it focused on terms and specific transactions that concerned core political and religious expression protected by the Constitution. The chair of the committee is Jim Jordan, Republican from Ohio, and he explained more in his opening statement.
The FBI got information from Bank of America. Specifically, it received a list of any customer who made purchases in the Washington, D.C. area January 5th through 7th, 2021. The whistleblower supervisor, special agent in charge of the Boston field office, Mr. Bonavolanta, corroborated Mr. Hill's testimony when he spoke to the committee. And so did Steve Jensen, the FBI's domestic terrorism operations section chief. But it wasn't just purchase data around a specific date that the FBI got from Bank of America. That was actually also overlaid with any firearm purchase at any time. And how did the FBI get this information? They asked for it. In fact, you can see on the display on the screen here, the email that was sent. The FBI told Bank of America, to recap our morning call, we are prepared to action immediately the following threshold customers confirmed as transacting business in Washington, D.C. between these specific dates. So if you're in Washington, D.C., visiting your kids, maybe visiting your aunt, or maybe just a friend, the FBI wanted to know about every single purchase you made. And if you're a gun owner, look out, you're going to the top of the list. For simply exercising your Second Amendment right, you're on the FBI's target list. And never forget, the federal government got this information without any process. No warrant, and frankly, no notification. The bank didn't tell the customer that, we're handing this information over to the FBI, the most powerful law enforcement agency in the world. Now, these FBI agents, Mr. Hill, Mr. Bonavolanta, Mr. Jensen, they all said this was wrong and, in fact, sent the information back to FBI headquarters in D.C. So that's how our investigation began. But since then, and we continue to investigate, but since then, we've learned that the financial surveillance was broader and there was actually a specific objective. The federal government is building profiles on the American people. And the profile isn't based on criminal conduct, it's based on political beliefs. And if you got the wrong political beliefs, well, you're potentially a domestic violent extremist. Now, how are they actually doing this? What are the mechanics of this? There's this entity we've discovered called the Domestic Security Alliance Council, kind of Orwellian in sound and title, the DSAC. And this is an entity where the FBI, the Department of Homeland Security, works with 650 of the largest companies in the world. These companies have to do over $1 billion in revenue a year. They represent 2/3 of the gross domestic product of the United States economy. And they work through this controlled access portal. We'll put that on the screen here. What are they sharing in this secret portal? Well, we're not exactly sure because it's secret. But we do know that they share some information, share reports. And one of the reports we got, called a liaison information report, said this: Any American who opposes firearm legislation, the easing of immigration restrictions, and COVID mandates is someone banks should be watching because, again, they might be an extremist.
Congressman Jim Jordan, Republican from Ohio, chair of the Select Subcommittee on the Weaponization of the Federal Government, at today's hearing. The ranking Democrat on the subcommittee is Stacey Plaskett, delegate from the Virgin Islands.
The FBI asked the Bank of America for information on individuals who fit three categories. People who came, that there is evidence that they were here on January 6th, that they purchased a firearm in the last 6 months, and, that's key, and they plan to come back for the inauguration. And they know that they were coming back for the inauguration based on Airbnb purchases, hotel, RSVPs in the DMV area. and they were individuals who had come on January 6th and know that through those purchases as well. And these were not all of the people that they were looking at, but what was the purpose of this? It was to make sure that a January 6th event didn't happen on inauguration because people were talking about it. They talk, you know, you had up there DMVs. Do we know what DMVs are? I don't want to tell you that. It's domestic terrorists, individuals engaged in domestic violence. That happens. When it's people who fit your political agenda, they're not criminals anymore. They're patriots. They're victims. They're not. They're criminals. And a jury of their peers found that when so many of them have been prosecuted in our court of law. Not by brown shirts, not by Nancy Pelosi, not by Biden's Justice Department, by a jury of their peers.
Congressional delegate from the Virgin Islands, Democrat Stacey Plaskett, at the Select Subcommittee on the Weaponization of the Federal Government hearing today. The U.S. Justice Department gave a 38-month update yesterday, March 6th, on the criminal cases stemming from the January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol. And they include 1,358 defendants charged, 769 of them pleading guilty, 152 found guilty at trials. And of the 859 federal defendants who have had their cases adjudicated and received sentences for their criminal activity, 497 have been sentenced to periods of incarceration. That information from the Justice Department. And finally, ahead of tonight's State of the Union address, President Joe Biden posted a video with actors who have all played fictional presidents in movies and TV shows. Morgan Freeman, Bill Pullman, Tony Goldwyn, Gina Davis, and Michael Douglas. Here's a portion of that video with Bill Pullman and President Biden.
We've had a lot of lines to learn ourselves. It's nice to watch somebody else have to get it all together rather than us, you know. In Independence Day, I had it easy, you know. We just had invaders from outer space coming in wanting to mess with us, and that tends to unify people, you know. And I'm not so sure it was the greatest speech ever, but I did manage to say two things. One is that we can't be consumed by our petty differences, and we will be united in our common interests. And somehow these words became something to remember. So I had the thought, Mr. President, that, you know, when people look at all that you've managed to do, they're going to remember, time will remember always, the importance of your words when you say that thing about there's nothing. There's nothing that we can't do when we do it together. Those are good ones. Best wishes to you, sir.
There's nothing beyond our capacity. And I believe that. Hey, come see me at the White House. I'm very serious. I'd love to meet you all in person. Thank you.
I'm with you.
Thank you. Very much.
I never spoke to so many presidents all at one time. Thank you. Thank you.
Bye.
President Biden posting that video on X. You can find the full video. You heard actor Bill Pullman, who played the President of the United States in the 1996 sci-fi film Independence Day, and also the other actors on the video, Morgan Freeman, Tony Goldwyn, Gina Davis, Michael Douglas, all played presidents either in the movies or on TV. And President Biden's State of the Union address is tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern. Listen live here on C-SPAN Radio. Watch on C-SPAN Television. And thanks for listening to Washington Today. Subscribe to C-SPAN's free evening newsletter, Word for Word, and get the stories making headlines in Washington sent to your inbox every day. Sign up at cspan.org/connect. Have a good night.